Izamit Carr, and I'm Telly Concepcion, and together we are Beyond the Numbers Podcast. We go beyond the numbers of sports and life to bring you the story within the story of the stories that matter. So come learn, grow, and have some fun with us. We are Beyond the Numbers Podcast.
On today's episode, the guys discuss the Orlando NBA bubble. Fights, food, and fun? How will it all go down? College 2.0? Also, Dak Prescott calling his own plays when it comes to his next NFL contract with the Dallas Cowboys. And finally, as a nod to July 1st this past week, the guys revisit a piece from their very first episode about their favorite day of the year, Bobby Bonilla Day. But first, their numbers of the day.
My number of the day is an ode to July 1st, which is Bobby Bonilla Day for all you Mets fans out there. And my number of the day is 1.12 million. That is the total amount the Atlanta Braves are still paying Bruce Sutter every year in deferred payments through 2021. And at the end of that last payment in 2021, he also gets a final payment of $9.1 million. These payments have been deferred since 1985. And Sutter hasn't played in the major leagues since 1988.
My number for the day is undisclosed. Ahmed, this is episode 15. We have made it. I'm surprised we're not canceled. My number is undisclosed because Kim Kardashian West has entered into a deal with Spotify to produce and host a new exclusive podcast for an undisclosed amount. Kardashian West is a vocal advocate for criminal justice reform. Through her studies, she has worked extensively with the Innocence Project, which is a great project. It's a nonprofit that focuses on exonerating wrongfully convicted individuals through DNA testing and advocating for broader criminal justice reforms. The podcast, which will be distributed under the Parcast Network Spotify acquired last year, will spotlight both Kardashian West's involvement in the investigation, producer Lori Rothschild and Saudi. Both will co-produce and co-host the show. It's great work. It should be highlighted. Bahamut, you and I both watched Just Mercy, highly recommended, on the same topic. And Spotify, we are available. Beyond the Numbers is available for an undisclosed amount. We're 15 episodes deep, so we beat John Krasinski Some Good News by at least 7 episodes. So come on, where's the offer at?
Yeah, undisclosed amounts are always good. I mean, think of it this way. I think Joe Rogan's big exclusive deal with Spotify had a disclosed amount, and that was huge. So undisclosed should be fun.
Before the business, Beyonders, it's time for Before the Business, where we answer your unanswered questions and find the numbers that went unfound in previous episodes. So we talked about this, Ahmed, and it sounds like Bill Belichick is listening. Cam Newton is now with the Patriots. Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft, huge Beyonders, heard the episode where we mentioned who was available, took Cam. NFL, all of you Beyonders in the NFL, Colin Kaepernick is still available. Be sure to listen back to episode 10. Also, Alex and Percy from Virginia asked, what would Kobe do if confronted with playing the NBA season versus sitting to highlight the Black Lives Matter movement? Great question. We love your thoughts. Be sure to hit us up on the Instagram and Twitter. Also, an update to a story we covered 2 weeks ago, Race in America, the power of the college athlete in this moment. We shared some issues with the Iowa football program and the firing of their racist strength coach. Well, now former running back Akram Wadley has come out with additional allegations against the program. He said, quote, playing for Iowa football was a living nightmare. My hope is my story saves others from the experiences and mistake of playing under a staff at Iowa that did nothing to stop the bullying and racism from happening to us under Chris Doyle, Brian Ferentz and Kirk Ferentz. I was threatened by Kirk Ferentz that my mule card would be taken away. And Ferentz did cancel the card. And he was not allowed to eat with or sit with teammates. Quote, I had to call my mother at 11 p.m. because I was hungry and have her order pizza for me, unquote. Amit, as a former, you know, we're both former collegiate players, like, that's ridiculous. To have food threatened against you on top of the other allegations is, you know, to me, unacceptable. And I think, you know, we're calling for Kirk Ferentz to be fired.
Yeah, I mean, that's so crazy. Like, what a weird thing to do. I mean, how do you do that to anyone?
For our first story, the NBA bubble, as presented, the numbers 113, 35, 150 million, 600 million, and 1 billion. 113 page document outlining the protocols for the 22 teams that were invited. Each team will get 35 slots. Each team's group of 35 includes players. The team must travel with at least one senior executive, an athletic trainer, a strength and conditioning coach, an equipment manager, and team security official. And teams must bring at least 13 players with a maximum of 17 players, which can include two-way players. $150 million is the reported cost of the three-month competition at Walt Disney World, which is being reported by ESPN. That does not include the loss or revenue due to a lack of ticket sales. $600 million is the amount players will retain by playing 88 regular season games and four rounds of playoffs. They would have been lost if the season was canceled. And $1 billion, excess of $1 billion, is the expected revenue loss before considering the extra cost of playing at Disney. For those that don't know, we'll let Maria Taylor from ESPN explain the NBA bubble situation.
They're calling it the bubble. But think of it as a camp, a basketball camp, with the biggest, fastest, baddest campers in the world. They won't dine in mess halls, but will have a dedicated Disney culinary team. Three meals a day, four on game day. They have personal trainers, but no pets. They won't be sleeping in cabins, but in a resort. Teams will be assigned to one of three deluxe hotels based on current standings in each conference. That's right, there are still levels to this. Barbers, manicurists, pedicurists, and hair braiders will be available. There will be ping pong, but no doubles, fishing, video gaming, and golf, and excursions to Disney's Animal Kingdom to enjoy. But this will not be a joyride. The schedule will be tight, the rules strict, the protocols strictly enforced, regular coronavirus testing, mask worn when off the court, no exceptions. Want to leave campus? That's cool, but there's a mandatory quarantine period upon return. Now for the business at hand. Teams will have seven courts to practice on. Want to get up some extra shots or an open run? That's by appointment only. Players want to take in the action and scout the competition? Oh, it can be done. But once they go live, each team has eight games to finalize seedings for the playoffs. Oh, and of course, no crowds. But it will still be intense. It will still be inspired. There may not be fans, but there's always fire when the best in the world square off. The NBA, distilled at Disney World. Eating, sleeping, and balling for the game's top prize and for pride inside the bubble.
Well, Amit, that sounds like college without Disney. Everybody gets to hang out. Everybody gets to lounge around. There's PlayStations in the lobby. We can go fishing. We can play ping pong, but we can't play doubles ping pong.
It's kind of crazy. So I think the cool part is, I mean, it's not like college because I think you remember your college dorm room. This ain't going to be any college dorm room.
Definitely wasn't any resort at Disney for sure.
I really want to know how they tier where people get to stay. Is it like based on your seed? You get the nicer hotels versus if you're a lower seed team, you don't get as nice a hotel. So that'll be interesting. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be college. You're all on one campus. You don't really get to go away. I think, you know, you talked about, hey, what happens when two guys are arguing or beefing? Like, what happens then? They don't get to go home. They get to go back to their room, you know, yeah, potentially in the same building. I don't know if they're going to be split up on floors.
Down the hallway from each other. One guy breaks out the night before at the game, right? There's an argument. Patrick Beverly elbowed somebody in the stomach. Now we're walking down the same hallway and the hotel is all forgiven. Are we taking it outside? Are we going to the death in the Gator Pit in the middle of Disney World? Like, what's going on with this?
Are there going to be pranks? Are they going to be running up and down hallways, doing stuff to doors and all that kind of stuff?
There'll be pranks because I think Chris Falk's going to be the security guard checking everybody's rooms and snitching on guys.
You're probably not wrong there. And then, you know, we had talked about, hey, all college athletes know you run out of meal plan money real quick trying to stay up with the food. I mean, they're going to have food there, three meals. Some of these guys, you know, eat six or seven times a day easily.
Yeah, that was crazy. Three meals a day, four meals on game day. But I got to imagine LeBron James or there's other guys that have a nutritionist. They're eating five, six times a day. There's no way they're eating three meals a day and staying at peak physical condition like they are. So are they allowed to bring their nutritionist? Are they going to be able to bring their own personal chef? Are they cutting side deals with Disney chefs and having Disney chefs hook them up and make sure other guys don't get hooked up? I feel like Michael Jordan would do something like that. He'd tell the chefs not to feed the other guys the good stuff. And, you know, those are the kind of questions that we had. What's the snack situation? You get hungry in between these three meals. What are the snacks? And again, I think Michael Jordan would be a savage and put potato chips in everybody's hallway, and he'd be the one eating carrots and celery and ready for the games.
I bet they'll have a Google set up, just everything out there. But we'll see. I mean, I think with Corona and all that kind of stuff, it's also going to be interesting how they set up cafeterias, how that's going to be done, how many people are going through, all of that. So you're looking at, I think, approximately 1,500 people that are going to be there. It's going to be an interesting logistical piece, but Disney is equipped for it. They do it every day with hundreds of thousands of people. So you got to believe they've got a process in place that's going to make sense. But let's look at the breakdown of what's going on there, right? So we can look at the devices that are going to be provided to all these players. So players will be wearing a device that measures their distance to other people on this campus with an alarm sounding every time they're within 6 feet for 5 seconds or more. So they'll have some reminders there. And players also have the option to wear a ring that measures body temperature, oxygen levels, and other factors that can alert the team and the league if a player is at high risk or has potentially contracted the coronavirus. So definitely some invasive pieces. The reminder's kind of nice because, you know, people are going to go back to their normal state. But, you know, wearing something that's measuring you all day and night, I don't think all the guys are necessarily going to be excited about that piece.
No, that one's pretty interesting to me. I mean, it sounds like an ankle monitor to me. And, you know, certain guys may have that perception of, you know, what else are you guys trying to monitor on me?
Yep.
Testing's another piece we know about. In the event of a positive test, the person will go to isolated housing, where a second test will be performed as soon as possible. If the positive is confirmed, the person will remain isolated until they meet a series of requirements, including multiple negative tests. And the NBA will also monitor and test close contacts of anyone who tests positive. Once in Orlando, players and staff will be subject to an in-room quarantine for about 36 hours, and there will be daily testing, but it won't involve the deep nasal swabs that go to the base of your brain, basically the way they're testing people now, which I guess will be nice for the guys.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine having to do that every other day. Can't be fun. But let's look at the lighter side of things. So entertainment. You know, when this was first pitched to us, you know, the statement was they're going to be at Disney, but they're only there to play basketball. They're not going to have anything else. This is, they're not going to open it up. But as we look at what the league is paying Disney and we look at the details of it, you know, the players are going to have entertainment options. It could potentially include concerts, comedy shows. They'll have movie screenings. And the NBA and Disney are also working on limited private access to Disney facilities and attractions. So once again, one of those early things that we thought wasn't going to happen, I think the NBA kind of finagled it in so that the players and potentially some of their families will be able to have access to a lot of this stuff. And then of course, those inside the complex will also have access to golf, tennis, bowling, boating, and fishing, in addition to resort swimming pools. And then they're talking about allowing some players to go to other games. So while there won't be any fans in the stands, they may potentially have other players at those games as well. So that could be an interesting addition. But, you know, it looks like they've added some entertainment. And really, when you read it and think about it and kind of hear what's coming out, it's going to sound like a pretty fun resort to spend 3 months in.
That's going to be the spot to go. You know, Kevin Hart is going to be up in there. You know, Gary Owen is doing some shows in there. I wouldn't put it past Steve Harvey to get in there. These are the type of shows they'll get. Dave Chappelle will be hanging out. And how great would it be to have a show just dedicated to showing NBA players watching NBA games? How many times have we wanted to watch LeBron on his couch watching Golden State versus the Clippers? What's his reaction when Steph pulls up and shoots the three? Is LeBron cheering? Is he pissed off because he just doesn't like Steph? Like, now you're going to put these guys in the stands. So are they going to boo? Are they going to cheer? Are they going to be stone-faced? I am so curious. That's going to be an awesome part to watch NBA, professional NBA guys watching each other play and react to one another. That, I think, will be awesome for us as fans.
Yeah, I think the other piece that's going to be a lot of fun is you're going to be able to hear everything, right? What the players are saying to each other. You know, all that trash talk you hear about, the guys whisper to each other or say, but you can't hear because of crowd noises and other things. It's going to be dead silent in there. You're going to be able to hear everything. So it's going to be fun. True. It's going to be fun. But what are these?
Out of retirement just to hear his trash talk on the
right
court. And Gary Payton. I throw Gary Payton in there too.
But but on top of, you know, just the entertainment tally, I know you found out they've got a lot of other perks too, don't they?
Oh yeah, they definitely have perks on perks on perks. So they'll have virtual chaplain services, which is great. People can stay in their faith while they're in there. In addition to yoga, meditation, and mental health services available to all the players and staff. And I think that's critical and important and something that most people don't have access to on a daily basis. Teams will have access to a designated culinary team that will, quote, help create individualized team menus, support team dietary needs, and ensure health and safety guidelines are followed, end quote, according to the memo. And as we mentioned earlier, players are going to receive 3 meals a day and a fourth on game days, and meals will be served individually. I got to believe side deals will be cut on this. But there will be, I'm sure, Taco Tuesday. Taco Tuesday, is that a guarantee?
Yeah, I mean, if LeBron's pushing this thing, we're going to have Taco Tuesday for sure. And I bet you anything, a lot of these big-name guys that have chefs and people on there, they're going to be on that culinary team.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Somebody's bringing Mama on the culinary team. Right. Mama the only one that makes mac and cheese the right way. She the only one that makes the right cornbread. Mama's on the culinary team or I ain't going to Orlando. You know somebody's saying that.
Well, yeah, and you know, athletes in general have their superstitions and they have their sort of game day processes. So everyone's got their thing, whether this is the meal I have to have, it's got to be cooked by this person, it's got to be done in this way. So even in the COVID world, I assume that all of this will still occur for these guys.
Yeah, as long as they don't have pizza deliveries coming in from Utah. Five guys delivering a pizza from Utah. I think everybody will be all right. Because, you know, if anything goes down, if any guy gets sick or food poisoning, they're going to be able to trace that back to the chef, the team he's on, and the chef that cooked it. So the guys got to be on their P's and Q's.
I could see the Clippers dressing up as like a Domino's delivery guy delivering to the Lakers. I know you could see
taking a pizza to LeBron.
Just Kawhi with like a wig on, just walking up there delivering him some pizza.
It could happen. So restaurants and lounges are operating at 50% dine-in capacity, and they'll be open at the player or team expense. Players will also have access, as you heard Maria said, to barbers, manicurists, pedicurists, hair braiders via appointment. So there were some fun points of the memo that we also saw, Ahmed, that caught our eye. We mentioned Chris Paul at the top. Chris Paul is famous for telling a referee that if a guy's jersey is untucked, it counts as a foul and a change of possession. He won a game by snitching on somebody. So there were immediately memes when there was an anonymous tip line for guys breaking protocol. How's that going to work? Who's going to monitor it? LeBron's going to call and say, yeah, I saw the whole Clippers team outside not observing social media distance. They're suspended. Send me to the finals or what?
Not social media distance, just social distancing. He may ask for social media distancing too. But it's going to get interesting on sort of who calls. It'll be so funny if you start seeing guys as the playoffs move forward, start making calls.
Yeah, okay. Because how do you enforce that? How do you enforce the actual violations from guys trying to get a competitive edge?
Well, they haven't really talked about what any sort of punishment's going to be for anything. So, I mean, all you know, it could just be a sternly written letter or, you know, public shaming. Who knows? But I think all of that stuff will come out as we get closer to tip off for those first games out of Orlando. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out based off of, you know, the increase in COVID cases in the state of Florida in general. I know they've started to roll back some of their openings, so we'll see how Orlando fares and what happens when all these guys land there, because as you were saying, it's tempting to go out and do stuff when you're in Orlando, even if you have this great, you know, capsule of fun at Disney, whereas if you were in other parts of the country, maybe not as much to do outside. So we'll see.
Yeah, they'll also have access to the parks, which is pretty awesome, and they'll get to go on excursions to Animal Kingdom and things like that. So it'll be interesting to see how or if this works. We'll see if this happens. We'll also see how many teams are formed on the other side of this. Since all these guys are going to be hanging out for extensive amounts of time, and I'm sure they'll form friendships and want to team up.
Yeah, we'll see. For some reason, all I can think of is Kevin Hart's special where he talks about how Mekhi Phifer rented out the entire Disney World, and he showed up for a birthday, and he's like, wait, it's just you and me for the whole park?
That's what it's going to be.
That's what it's going to be like for a lot of these guys, so.
For our second story today, Dak Prescott, show me the money. Show me the money.
Show it to me, Telly. Show it to me. Show me the
money. Numbers, 26, 4, 40. 26-year-old Dak Prescott has made $4 million in four seasons while going 40-24 and leading the Cowboys on two playoff runs.
For those of you that don't know, Dak Prescott recently signed a franchise tender with the Dallas Cowboys after failing to reach an agreement on a long-term deal. So what does that mean, Telly?
So Dak Prescott, he's 26 years old. He was drafted in 2016 in the fourth round from Mississippi State, and he's made about $4 million, as we mentioned, in four seasons as the Dallas Cowboys starting quarterback, Amit.
I know we've got some Cowboys. I know we've got some Cowboys fans listening.
And we do have Cowboys fans listening. But you also mentioned to me that the first pick of the MLB draft is already making more. His signing bonus was bigger than what Dak Prescott's made for taking hits for the Dallas Cowboy America's team for 4 years.
That's right. First pick of the draft got just a little over $8.4 million as a bonus.
As a bonus. So
for signing.
Dak Dak played 16 games all four seasons. He's 40-24, led the Cowboys to the playoffs twice, NFL Rookie of the Year, two-time Pro Bowler, and making about $1 million a year. Dak wants a new four-year contract, which will put him at 30 years old, while Jerry Jones is standing pat on wanting to only sign him to a five-year contract, putting him at 31 years old when it expires.
Yeah, and, you know, we've talked about this, you and I have, in some of our other planning sessions. You know, that year makes a difference, you know, in a game of numbers and in a game of perception. Signing a 29 or 30-year-old quarterback versus signing someone in their 30s is a big difference when you look at production. And honestly, for quarterbacks, it's a little different because outside of a couple of outliers, your core production as a quarterback is coming in your mid to late 20s. And then there's a bit of a drop off. But still, when you think about how guys try to plan contracts out in general, they try to do it so that they land before or right on the 30-year mark and not over, because that will allow them to have an equally large contract as they hit their second contract, normally second or third, depending on the sport. And some examples of this, you know, the Yankees had Robinson Cano there. And he ended up leaving, you know, his first contract, his big contract with the Yankees ended at age 30. So he was going to be 31 going into that next season. The Yankees did not want to pay him big money. Seattle needed some talent there to make some noise. So they took him on. Same thing with Albert Pujols, Cardinal, 7 years. He hit 31 at the end of that contract. The Cardinals didn't want to take a chance on him, so they let him go. And the Angels took a huge chance on him, gave him a 10-year deal worth $240 million versus the 7-year deal he had with the Cardinals initially that was a total of $100 million. So, you know, in some cases, at least in baseball, guys are going to take chances on you. But football is probably a little different when it comes to dishing out that kind of money later on in your career. Now, there's so many terms to look at when we talk about what's going on in the NFL offseason. And with the case of Dak Prescott, it's the franchise tag or the transition tag, right? So these are terms we hear a lot in the offseason. But what does that mean? What does the franchise tender mean? So essentially, an NFL team can place a franchise tender or a transition tag on any player who's set to become a free agent the following season, right? And the tag means essentially they want to hold that player because they believe they're a key player to their team and they don't want them to be an unrestricted or restricted free agent and hit the market and find another team. So the franchise tool is used essentially to lock a player into a one-year deal to hold on to them, right? Players generally don't like this, right? Because they're not getting paid what they want to get paid. They're essentially being forced to stay for a set amount of money. However, the positive for players who are tagged is that this one-year deal is guaranteed and the salary represents an average of the top five highest players at that specific position, right? And then, of course, so it could be that or more. The player's guaranteed salary for that one season is attractive, but it also doesn't give those players long-term security. But there's various types of franchise tags, and actually there's various limits for how much players will get depending on their position. We don't have to talk about that today, but we could definitely get into the different types of tags and what those ceilings are for each position. For the quarterback, it works out pretty well, but running backs are in the bottom two or three positions, so it definitely gets interesting from a money standpoint when you look at different positions.
How well does it work out? Recently, Dak agreed to sign his tender, which is a 1,450% salary increase over what he made last year. The total amount of his tender is, or his tag, as Ahmed explained, is $31.4 million. Now, we just told you he made $4 million for the last four seasons. He's going to make $31.4 million just for this season. By signing the tag, Dak agrees not to hold out from training camp, while the Cowboys basically agreed not to rescind the tag, like they won't take it back. To me, Amit, this is definitely a win-win-win-win-win for Dak Prescott, either way you look at it, because it has him holding all the cards. Let's say all things go well this season. We fast forward to 2021. Everything's good in the NFL, and the Cowboys finish between 5-11 and 11-5. Okay, and Prescott performed somewhere between his highs of last year, which was 4,902 yards and 30 touchdowns, and his lows of 2017, which was 3,324 yards, 22 touchdowns, and 13 picks. Once everybody sits down to negotiate, the Cowboys will have three choices after this season, Amit. They can tag Prescott again, they can sign Dak to a long-term deal, or they can let him walk, which makes no sense after they're putting $31.4 million into him just for this year. If they tag him again, per the tag rules, the Cowboys have to guarantee him $37.7 million for next year because it's a 120% increase of his current salary in 2021 if they go that route.
Not an increase. It's not an increase. It's 120% of his total salary for this
120% of his salary. Thank you.
I'd be on board. I'd be on board for him. Yeah. I'd be totally on board for 120% increase. I don't think he'd leave. He'd stay. You're going to over double my salary for the next year? I'll stay.
I'll take that. So per the rules, as I'm going to explain them, it's 120% of the current salary. So he'll get an increase. It'll go from what he's getting to 37.7. They can sign him to a long-term deal. If we look at this option, based on the Carson Wentz deal with that the Eagles signed, he got 4 years, $128 million, 66.5 guaranteed at signing. And we can say that's the going rate now, right? That's the highest contract that's been signed. That figure could go down if Dak performs like horribly or gets injured, but it's much more likely it goes up because you got the contracts, Amit, of Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson hanging out there. So it's likely that the money will move up.
I mean, he wants more than 40 a year. I think it was like $41 million or $42 million is what he's asking for. If you look at what quarterbacks are asking for in general, guys you've never heard of, guys that have losing records in the league, guys that don't have, you know, I would say half the skill set that Prescott has. His skills alone give him most of the cards in this situation, and you're gonna see them have to shovel over a lot of money for him. As a Giants fan, I love this because it's gonna take up a significant portion of their cap space, kind of like Eli did for us for a couple of years there. So this is win-win for me too.
Yeah, and the third option they have on it is let Dak go after this season and move forward with a rookie or whatever else is available. So your Giants might end up with Dak. They might end up paying Dak that big amount of money. And you could find yourself in the same situation that you found yourself with Eli Manning.
That's not happening. But he's not leaving.
I digress. The third option really doesn't make any sense, but we want to let you guys know that's an option. The Cowboys can definitely drop him.
And it's the Cowboys. It's the Cowboys. It's Jerry Jones. Anything is possible.
Anything. So let's take a look at the second option. The second option will cost the Cowboys $100 million in guaranteed money. You got to put it this way. He's going to get $31.4 million this year for the tag, plus at least $66.5 for the future years, with the Cowboys basically betting against themselves, hoping they get a discount if he gets injured or plays really bad. Okay. In option one, if they tag him again, rewind everything we just talked about and start over. Everyone comes back to negotiate, and the Cowboys will face the same three options that we just mentioned. If they tag Dak for third franchise tag, it comes with a 144% salary increase, which means Dak would cost them $54.26 million, hence the three-year $123 million figure that we mentioned. An extension with the price dictated by the value of Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson deals and the next round of TV revenues. And if the Cowboys win a Super Bowl during this time, it makes Dak even more expensive. All he has to do is avoid going crazy, getting a crazy injury, or having a meltdown where he forgets how to throw the ball downfield. His strategy is pretty much on it like Kirk Cousins, 2016, 2017. Cousins signed a pair of franchise tenders. He earned $44 million over those 2 years while Washington's front office kept tripping over themselves. He then signed with the Vikings for $84 million and counting. And by the time Washington realized they'd driven down a contractual dead end, it was too late and they had to let him go. The franchise tag, as you mentioned, is a curse for most players because it limits your negotiating leverage at the peak of your career. Okay, it takes away your prime years, and this team is locking you up before you can sign a long-term deal. For quarterbacks, though, it's a side note because their price tag is so high, as you mentioned, it depends on position. So Dak made $4 million for the last 4 years, and he's going to make $31.4 million for just this year based on his tag. That wouldn't work for DBs or running backs or any other position. But for QBs, you sign a couple franchise tags, and you're in the money.
Yeah, and it's interesting. So I want to point out, you did say if the Cowboys win the Super Bowl. I don't know what you're smoking over there in California, but
it can happen. It's an option. We provide all the different outcomes and scenarios the Beyonders.
Anything.
Do I think it's likely or probable? No. Is it a possible outcome? Yes.
Anything is possible. I agree. But
the Giants could win it too. Shoot, I'm just saying, the Giants could win.
They ain't going anywhere. But we digress. So, you know, let's go back to the fact that Jerry Jones has stuck to this 5-year contract since last summer, mostly because the Cowboys, who have been very free spending in a lot of ways, need to prorate each signing bonus and guarantee over as many years as possible so they can afford to pay the next signing bonuses and guarantees. So they're pretty much shuffling their money around and trying to make it last as long as possible and stacking it and kind of offsetting it.
Sound familiar? Bobby Bonilla Day, basically, what they're trying to do.
But, you know, players, you know, particularly quarterbacks, as we've talked about, prefer those shorter contracts because, like we've said, the shorter contract means they get back on the market again. And as this market shoots up astronomically, they're going to make so much more money if they re-sign every 2 to 3 years than if they get this long-term contract. And that's another huge difference between baseball and football. Baseball guys looking for that long set, we're good, let's set it and forget it. Football, especially quarterbacks, they're looking for that short piece to then all of a sudden catapult into another stratosphere of money.
Yeah, and particularly because the TV deals are becoming so rich and the negotiations are every few years versus baseball, that the increase in money and potential pot that they can pull from is increasing exponentially in football. So shorter contracts make sense. But like you said, Jerry Jones is standing pat on this 5-year deal. If he had just given in on it and agreed to the 4-year deal last summer, he'd already have paid Dak Prescott a chunk of money and been able to put some of that into the 2019 budget. Instead, he's going to write him a $31.4 million check and get no benefits past one season of service and a chance to just have the same conversation next year. If the Cowboys do eventually get their 5-year cap-friendly contract, it will only come after multiple 1-year cap-unfriendly contracts, which of course basically defeats the whole purpose. So you give them the $31.4 million for this year, sign them to 4 next year, he's gotten $30 million out of you without having to re-sign. There's still a few weeks left in the franchise tag negotiation window, which closes on July 15th. And if Jerry Jones signs Prescott to a contract similar in size and shape to the Wentz deal now, he can basically beat Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes to the punch and stretch the cap space out to improve the bottom line over the next few years and climb out of whatever hole he's digging himself into right now. Or he can just pay Dak Prescott the $123 million for the 3 years now because he doesn't want to pay him $128 million for a 4-year contract, Ahmed. Does it make any sense? Either way, it's a win for Dak Prescott.
Yeah, and you know, there's a couple of things here. We talk about these gigantic numbers, right? And it's like, is anyone worth that much? Clearly, these guys are because they do something that a few guys can do, and they're bringing in enough revenue. No owner is signing a check of any amount to anyone if they're losing money on it, right? So clearly, they're bringing in the revenue to make this possible. And for Jerry, I think it's not a matter of how much you're spending. It's a matter of his way or Dak's way, right? If he gives Dak that money, that means Dak won, I guess, in some way. And Jerry doesn't want Dak winning. right? The league doesn't necessarily want the players winning. We saw this, and we're going to talk about this in our next segment, but leagues never want the players to have too much power and too much control, and this is just a power and control move, I think. In my opinion, the money, of course, is important, but I think it's more about Jerry saying, this is what I want, and this is how I want it. I don't care if I have to pay you more. You're not going to have that control. You're going to be worried about it every year.
Yeah, control. Let's define that. He can pay Dak Prescott the four-year, $128 million deal Dak asked for, or he's basically going to end up paying him $123 million for 3 years because he'd rather tag him.
Yeah.
Case closed.
But he'll be right, so that's all that matters, right?
So there will be baseball in 2020. Thank goodness for that. So right now we want to get into
show me the money.
And we want to talk about one of our favorite days, which is July 1st. And other than opening day, as far as baseball day goes, July 1st is up there. You know why, Amit?
Tell me why. What's going on that day?
Of July. You know, we celebrate this day. We call each other on this day.
It's Bobby Bonilla Day.
Bobby Bonilla Day. Why is it Bobby Bonilla Day? Well, in 2000, the Mets agreed to buy out the remaining $5.9 million on Bobby Bonilla's contract. But instead of paying Bobby Bonilla $5.9 million at the time, the Mets agreed to make annual payments of $1.2 million for 25 years starting on July 1st, 2011 at 8% interest. Tell me that isn't the most gangster contract you've heard of.
It's pretty amazing. And I think the Mets have been notorious to pull off stuff like this.
And so is Bobby Bonilla, because the Orioles pay him $500,000 a year for 25 years that started in 2004. So I want Bobby Bonilla Day to be my day. I want to get $1.5 or $2 million in the check every year for 25 years. Like, where do I sign up for that?
You want to know another fun Mets little contract that they have that they're still paying off?
Please, are they paying Bernie Madoff's prison bill? Or
oddly enough, they're paying Brett Saberhagen's deal.
Wow.
Brett Saberhagen, as we speak in 2020, is 56 years old.
So Brett Saberhagen hot dogs, right? No.
He has not pitched for the Mets since 1995.
Damn.
And they deferred a $6.25 million deal over 25 years.
So he's
started paying in 2004. And he pretty much gets that paid out yearly.
Can the Mets and go ahead? Sorry,
it's kind of crazy. So the cash payout yearly is kind of insane. So for example, this year, that $250,000 this year, $250,000 next year, all the way through 2028.
Can we put the Mets in charge of Social Security? Please. Can the Mets just own Social Security going forward? $1.5 million. Once you hit 50, can you just start getting $1 million checks? Right. Can the Mets make this happen? I think so, right?
I mean, they've paid $4.25 million so far, and
I want it now.
I know, right?
It's crazy. No, I want it later. I want the Mets to pay me later. It's my money. I want it later deferred in annual payments.
I mean, the Mets essentially gave him like a nice little retirement pension plan.
That is true.
Hey, 25 years, we'll give you $250,000 a year.
And it's regardless of Corona.
Yeah, he's still getting paid. But that's going to be interesting. And we can talk about this later for sure. And this is one of the things under contention is with a shortened season, what happens to, you know, service years, payment, you know, what's considered a full season? Are they prorating salaries? What's happening to these guys that, you know, are owed money, that are retired, deferred money? So all that stuff, all those details will be coming out in the next couple of weeks as we get closer to hopefully a season.
Is it safe to say we'll go beyond the numbers on those?
We definitely will.
Nice.
Let's wrap this thing up. For our first segment, we talked about the Orlando NBA bubble. Fights, food, and fun. How will it all go down? Is it just College 2.0? Tracking devices, anonymous hotlines, and maybe even some basketball will be played sometime this year.
For our second segment, Dak Prescott had us asking, show me the money. Jerry Jones could either give in and give Dak a four-year deal for $128 million or win, Amit, and prove his point of being the owner and the boss and just tag him for the next 3 years for $123 million. Good luck, Jerry.
And for our last and final story, as July 1st is Bobby Bonilla Day, and it has come and gone this year, we had to revisit our piece from our very first episode about our favorite day of the year. Happy Bobby Bonilla Day, everyone.
Thank you for going beyond the numbers with us. We're a weekly podcast dedicated to going beyond the numbers of sports and life to bring you the story within the story of the stories that matter. We're available on all major podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Whatever you're listening on now, please be sure to click the follow or subscribe button to get our latest content.
And remember, you can find us on Instagram, Beyond the Numbers Podcast, and on Twitter at Beyond TN Podcast.
Till next time, peace.